figuring out how to make money off of podcasting is something that is not a science yet. And I think a lot of people, even inside the industry, are still learning. The industry right now is in a weird place. People keep talking about, oh, it's going to burst soon. And I just don't believe that. Yes, also, there are so many podcasts out there, but like, so what? I'm a huge advocate for just doing the thing you want to do and not waiting for anyone to ask.
This is The Secret Lives of Black Women. I'm Sharla.
And I'm Lauren.
And today we're talking about podcasting.
You know, one of the biggest questions I feel like we get about this show is, how did you start a podcast and how can I get my podcast made? And I'm like, I don't know.
We kind of do,
but we got a unique path in that, like, we pitched the show.
We're insiders.
They liked it hardly. Yeah. But we pitched, they liked it, and it got made. But I think there's far more to what it means to, like, make a podcast with, like, a network versus, like, on your own. And there's so many questions about this world that I do not have the answers to.
There isn't. And I think it really is. And, I mean, I think we are insiders. Like, we, even though we're not, like, heavy hitters, like, we know the inner workings of TV, frankly, you know? And so it's just like, I don't know if a lot of people who are just starting their own podcast would do it the same way that we're doing it. And also, podcasting has become a big business and it's been taken over by, like, media companies. So it's really up to you how you want to make your podcast. Like, if you want to make it a huge thing or if you just want to make sure you get your voice out there. But I think that there's value in either way.
Yeah. And we've got the perfect person here to give us tips, tools, and just to pick her brain about starting a podcast. And it's a name that you've heard before if you are a listener of the show. Today's guest is our producer for our first two seasons and the managing producer for this, our third season, Stephanie Kariuki.
Oh, my goodness.
We love
Stephanie Kariuki. She's was born in Nairobi, Kenya, grew up in Columbus, Ohio, and now lives here in New York. She's had many past lives as a reporter and on-air interviewer at Radio 1 and co-creator, a co-host of her own podcast, The Millennial Hour. Man, she's a busy bee.
She's a busy bee. At Stitcher, she helped us develop and produce this show from scratch while working on other shows. She is a producer here at Stitcher, which is the podcast company that produces this show. And she now produces documentaries here at Stitcher, too. And she's just a delight of a human being.
She's a force of nature, frankly.
She is. And this is interesting because Stephanie is the first guest that we that we'll have on the show. And already I'm learning about her because I didn't know that Stephanie hosted a podcast in the past.
I didn't know a lot of these things.
Secrets.
That we just found out. But I can't wait to get into this talk with Stephanie, which I think will be a very special one because she's worked so closely with us and she's very much in the DNA of this show. Like, even though you hear Lauren and I on the mic all the time, Stephanie's very much the person who shaped this show, and I can't wait to, like, dive into her brain.
Get all the info from her super producer brain.
Let's do it. Stephanie, you do know when I first met you, I thought your last name was Japanese, even though you are
me
fully
too.
Black.
So many people think that.
You're fully
so
black.
So many people think that I'm black.
But I was like, maybe she's married to
a Japanese
Japanese.
Kariuki is a very common Kenyan name.
Which is
Kariuki
so cool.
Kariuki is like a tribe in Kenya, the Kariukis. It's. I love my last name. I don't
want
to get
rid of it. I also love how Stephanie's low-key shade. Let me educate you, too. Kariuki is a very common Kenyan name, and if you knew anything about Kenya, you would
feel like
that
was shade, just because, like, why would I know anything
exactly.
about
Kenya? Exactly. I expect no one to know that.
Stephanie
but also,
loves
like,
to shade
what
us.
Do other... She does, which is why I'm just, like, constantly trying to get shades
in
especially because Stephanie's younger than us. Let's put it all on the table, like, this relationship. She's younger than us. She's very smart. She's very confident, which gives me a little bit of rage sometimes. She's a child genius.
She's the light of our lives, too.
Yeah. She talks to us like a mom sometimes.
Okay.
And it's like very like, come on, children. And I'm like, okay, we're older. Cool. But now I really want to know, like, what are other Kenyan names? Like, why is, like, what is the Kenyan name sound like? Which is why I'm like, have I ever heard a Kenyan? I don't know.
Oh, my gosh. So my name, Kariuki, is actually from my aunt and uncle, because I lived there for a period of time when I was in Kenya without my mom. And so that's, like, not, no one else in my family is even called a Kariuki. Like, that is a blood relative.
What is, why did you live with your aunt and uncle?
So my mom, so I was born in Kenya. And then when I was 2 years old, 3 years old, my mom was, like, going to America to, like, you know, do the whole immigrant thing.
Come that whole thing.
The whole immigrant thing. America, there's gold streets, and I'm going to live a better life. And so she made the choice. She couldn't come with me. She left me in Kenya when I think it was, like, 2.5, 3 years old.
Were you an only child? Are you the oldest?
I'm an only child.
Okay.
And so she left me with my aunt and uncle who... I'm not going to lie. They, looking back on it, were very wealthy. Like, we had a lot of money. I had, like, a person who drove us around. We were living in, like, a 6-bedroom house.
I wish you guys were in the studio to see how Stephanie did that. She was just like, we were fancy. Okay.
I was like, oh, this is life now. And then at 5, you know, my mom had built enough stability that she was like, okay, like, let's. And that was a very common thing in our family. I think a lot of immigrant families do that. And so I came here when I was 5, and yeah, it was hard. You know, I didn't believe my mom was my mom for a little bit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And you came to Ohio.
Yeah. Yeah. We stayed in Texas and moved around a bit, and then we settled down in Ohio just because that's where we had other family members.
Was it a big transition for you, A, not only coming to America, but coming from this very wealthy life to, I imagine, your life when you came to America was much harder and difficult? Was there resentment?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was like, I just didn't believe that this was supposed to be my life, you know? Like, I was just like...
Just like a toddler, a bougie toddler.
Yeah, like, I didn't believe my mom was my mom. Like, I looked at my mom, she was like, she's skinny, she's tall, she's beautiful. She was just like this beautiful woman who seemed unattainable in a weird way. And so when I came here, everything that she was just felt like everything I wasn't. And I just had a hard time adjusting to, like, believing this new reality. And so it wasn't so much, like, the things that I missed or the, you know, cars or whatever. It was more that I just didn't feel connected to, like, anything that was happening. And it took a long time. And, I mean, my mom is amazing. Like, she gave me that grace to just, like, you know, call her by her first name and just, like, figure shit out. But... It was hard. It was hard. I honestly don't think I really adjusted until I was, you know, 10.
It took you five years to adjust.
I think so.
That's really jarring at 5 years old. But yeah. I have a kind of a similar story. My mom left us in Haiti with my grandparents and my aunt and uncle, my aunt and my uncle. And then when we came to America at 4, my twin sister wouldn't call my mom. Because she didn't believe that was her mom. But I, you know, whoever feeds me is my mom. So I immediately was like, yes, mommy, I'll do whatever you'd like.
Yeah.
Give me food. Thank you.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But I can tell that that's like, it's something that stays with you, even though it happens at such a young age.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
How do you think that that experience has defined you, or you see it in your adult life now?
I mean, it's tough because I think... The good thing is my mom was always there for me. And later she remarried to my dad, who I call him my dad, but he's technically my stepdad. And so I always saw like a strong relationship in my life. But it did, I think, affect my trust in people just because at a young age, I was just moving around a lot. I didn't know what was going on a lot. When things are just happening without any explanation.
Nobody tells you.
And no one's telling you. And they just can't. They don't even know what's going on. And, you know, my mom couldn't get, like, she was working 2 jobs, 3 jobs at one point. Like, we were struggling to find a place to live at one point. Like, she just couldn't, you know? So, and as a kid, I was, I'm still this way. I'm a pleaser. I just want people to, like, be okay with what I'm doing, and I didn't want to cause any trouble. So I'm just sitting there, you know, trying to live the easiest life possible for my mom. And I still think I do that. I try to, like, live the easiest life possible so that way it doesn't affect other people. But
interesting.
Therapy,
interesting.
You know, yeah. That's hopefully changing.
Well, this makes me want to ask you about, you know, what you've chosen to do with your life thus far, because you are an overachiever.
I am.
And I do, frankly, you know, Stephanie, I'm going to say this on the air, but you've been absolutely one of the best people I've ever worked with. Oh, like, you have been on your shit. You're so smart. You've absolutely made this show what it is. And it's been... don't cry.
I know.
Don't cry. Yeah,
I don't cry. So, no.
I know you don't have any emotions. Stephanie does not cry, but will she cry before the end of this episode?
We're going to try for sure. But seriously, like, I think you could truly do anything, and you've chosen to bring your talents and your work ethic and your spirits to this world. Why? Why in the world?
Oh my gosh, that's a good question. I mean, I remember when, did you guys watch Soledad O'Brien's Black in America? You guys remember that series?
I did not watch
it. Okay,
no.
It's okay. It's fine.
But I remember it.
I remember being, I don't even know. I was young and I was watching it and I was like, I want to do that. And it was just like, and ever since then, it just stuck. Like, I couldn't shake it. And I just thought what Soledad O'Brien was doing. For those of you who don't know, Soledad O'Brien, she's a journalist. She had this series on CNN, and she basically went and just went to different communities in Black America and talked about just how being Black is not a monolith. You know, she went to, like, really rich areas that were more poverty stricken, and just talked about different issues that back now it seems normal, but back then it felt really groundbreaking, or at least it did to me. And I just thought, oh my gosh, she just gets to tell people stories and gets paid for it. Like, that's so cool. So anyways, initially I wanted to be a journalist, hard news. And then I got to college and I was like, ooh, this is boring. I don't like this. I applied to a couple of internships. I didn't get them. I got one that was in a commercial radio station, and it was for Power 107.5, and they just let me do whatever I wanted. They would just let me be in the studio. They would let me interview people. Like, I don't know why, they just did, and I just fell in love. I used to just go into the studio when no one else was there and just, like, edit stuff, because it was... I don't know. It just felt good to be alone and with the computer and, like, in the session and just doing what you want to do. And yeah, I loved it. So yeah, storytelling is just something I've always been passionate about.
Just to get down to the nuts and bolts, because we, you know, in our intro, we were talking about this is the number one question we get of, like, how did you get a podcast on the air? How do I start a podcast? Yeah. And for you, I'm like, nuts and bolts, how did you get the job at Stitcher, starting with, like, how did you even get your first internship at a radio station that sounds like it's a big radio station?
No, that's a question I get. As soon as I say I'm a podcast producer, people ask me that question too. And I say, well, you know, my first internship was something that just, you know, I'm not going to lie, I had a journalism background and I applied for a bunch of things, and that was just something I got. And I would say to anyone who's starting out, you apply. It's so hard. I mean, I really respect the people who are trying to get in right now. It's so difficult. And if you can't get something, make something. And that's what I did with me and my friend. We created a show called The Millennial Hour, and it was a small podcast where we just talked about things happening with millennials. And it was just a passion project because we weren't getting any jobs. Mm-hmm. We were applying and not getting things. And this was much later than my internship. I had already gotten a journalism degree. I had moved to DC and tried to get another journalism degree because I wasn't getting another job and it wasn't working. Nothing was working. So we decided to start a podcast, and the way we did that was we came up with a name, and we got some mics on Amazon. I had carpet in my apartment, and I knew that carpet was necessary because of just my background. But I would say, like, if you're starting, like, make sure you have somewhere, even if it's your closet, somewhere that's just the sound is not bouncing off of the walls. And then you know, we decided that we got the mics and we decided we were going to record in my apartment, and we just created an outline. And that's the other thing I say with people, especially if you're starting now. I think it was easier back then, but it's just getting harder. You got to have a specific idea. Like, it cannot just be, you know,
two people talking.
Yeah, two people talking. Or one person talking. Yeah. Think of something that is unique to you. What do you actually care about and why? Because when you care about something and it's specific, it's going to translate to the audience and it's going to translate to other people. And also, the other important part of podcasting is consistency. And it's hard to do something over and over again if you don't care about it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just hard. So don't try to make something that you're like, oh, I think people really like this. It's that, this, that. No. What do you care about? Is it specific? And is it something that you can do 100 times over and over? And get a mic, get a carpet, get a closet, and just record on your computer. That's my number one piece of advice. And then we can talk more about what happens after that, but that's a good start.
Can you talk about the podcast industry, like, as it is now? Because it's changed so much from when Marc Maron started doing stuff in his closet. Now it's like everybody has a podcast. It sometimes feels like there's, you know, too many. Yeah. So it's like, what do you say to somebody who's like, you know, should I even do it? There's so many. Like,
yes, you should do it. You should totally do it. Yes. Yes. Also, there are so many podcasts out there. But like, so what? I think that the industry right now is in a weird place. People keep talking about, oh, it's going to burst soon. And I just don't believe that. I think that we, especially Black women, especially people of color, our voices don't get heard as much as they should be. And I think, you know, sometimes when people are talking about these oversaturated markets, they just mean like people just want to make more stuff, but I don't feel like there's as much quality stuff as there could be. And that's why I tell people, like, if you have an idea, like, don't look at like what all the noise is making. Like, think about what you care about and do that thing, because at the end of the day, even if like 30 people listen to it or whatever, like, that thing is going to be able to take you on to the next thing. And that's what happened with me with the Millennial Hour, right? Like, it wasn't Secret Lives of Black Women. It didn't get a lot of, you know, listens, but one person heard it and that person was like, you should apply for this job. And I got the job at Stitcher.
When you got the job at Stitcher, did you still want to continue with your own podcast? And do you see yourself hosting a podcast in the future? Because when we read your bio, I was like, Stephanie hosted a podcast?
No idea.
I never talk about
She's
it.
She's literally never mentioned
it. Has never mentioned it in all the conversations we've had.
What is, are you ashamed?
Not once.
Oh, I'm not ashamed. It was a good show. I'm proud of it. We got people from NPR.
Cool.
Who listened to it. It was a good show. I think, you know, when I started at Stitcher, I was so excited to get to, it felt like I was starting my career that I had imagined. And at the same time, the person who I co-hosted the show with, Ashley, who's one of my best friends, she got another opportunity where she was just going to be working remotely. And so it was just difficult for us to, like, work on the show together, like, logistically. It's already difficult enough if you're working professionally in the field. It's just 10 times harder if you're just doing it as a side project. So we just took a break from it, just to kind of, like, explore our new lives. But I think for me, I would definitely host another podcast, but I would want it to be, again, something that's really close to my heart. It would probably also be something that's more documentary-esque, and I think it would be more journalistic also. But right now, nah, you know, not right now. I want to really, like, build up my skills as a producer and just continue to make really good stuff and then figure out how I could be the center of it later.
What's your favorite thing about being a producer?
Oh, you guys. No, I'm just
don't
kidding.
Fuck with
no,
us.
You're kidding.
Stephanie.
She looked at me so sincerely in my eyes and then said, just kidding.
That is the signature Stephanie shade. It comes with like a soft candy wrapper.
And then a bite. And then a bite.
And then a stab.
And you're like, okay, I'm going to cry now because I really thought you were being
serious. Honestly, this is one of the things that I love about Stephanie. It's like immediately when we first met her, she immediately started like making fun of us. Yeah. And we're just like, thank you.
Because I like, honestly, that's my favorite thing about podcasting. I love working with, like, I just do well working with talent in a weird way. Like, I feel like I'm a people person and I want to just laugh with people, but also get shit done with people. It's very fun to just collaborate on a project with someone, but also as the producer, be in charge. Because I also like being in charge.
So let's take a break. But when we come back, I want to talk more about what people can do to get a show off the ground or to the next level. And we're back. So, Stephanie, for people who have an idea or already have a show, how could they sell it or how could they get it to like a professional level?
Definitely. Yeah. I think that, well, first, there's two ways. If you have an idea, the first thing I highly recommend is you make a proof of we call it a proof of concept, but it can be like a pilot. Just try it out. That's really what it is. Try it out yourself, whether that's at home or if you have access to equipment or anything like that. Hearing the show just helps so much. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have a proof of concept, really, really, really nail down what is this show. Like, I always do the who, what, when, where, why. Like, who is this for, audience-wise? Who are the listeners? And don't be afraid to don't say everybody, because mm-hmm. everybody don't like everything.
Yeah.
I would say specifically nail down your audience. And then why? Why now? You know, 2020, there's so many things going on. Is it politics? Is it religion? Is it something else? And then, like, where do you see the show going and in a year or two? And I think the last thing is, like, when you come to a network like Stitcher or, like, any other network, just understand that it's complicated and it takes a while and it's hard. You know, figuring out how to make money off of podcasting is something that is not a science yet. And I think a lot of people, even inside the industry, are still learning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, don't take it personal. If you bring it to one particular podcast company and they don't accept it, it might not be what they're trying to do.
Exactly.
Like, you can go to a different place. Like, failure is such a part of the process. Even in your proof of concept, which is really just record yourself or record the idea that you have and listen back and see if you like it. Yeah, failure is a very big part of this mm-hmm. process, and just, you know, keep trying. If it doesn't work the first time, it's informative of what could make it better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And how do you even get it to someone at a network? Do you need to know someone? Is there mm-hmm. like, for example, at Stitcher, because I know this is a question we'll get, is there like a info at Stitcher that you can submit mm-hmm. a pitch? Is there a pitch line, or do you take submissions?
Yeah, that's hard.
From the public, yeah.
We do take submissions from the public, but I also say, this is media, y'all. It helps to know someone. I think a lot about, like, when I was reading about Childish Gambino show Atlanta, and how he was like, yeah, when I went to the networks, I just, like, pitched this whole show, and then I just made my own stuff. And I'm not saying that's what she needs to do, but I think about that a lot, because the pitching process and getting something to get greenlit
yeah.
is so different from the making
yeah.
and the thing being alive. And so it's a whole different skill set. And I think it's a hard skill set. And unless you know someone inside the industry, and that's why I'm trying to, like, do my best to kind of explain what that looks like, it's not the same as your thing actually being good. It should not give validity to whether or not you have a good thing. And so when I'm thinking about pitches, I just tell people, try to the who, what, when, where, why, and be as explicit as possible. Another idea that my producer friend, GoFen, he's amazing. Shout out to you. He told me that before he pitches stuff, he'll always kind of just casually bring it up to his friends and or like just people, random people he might not know, and float like the log line. We call it a log line. It's like the first sentence of an idea or the summary of an idea and see what they say. And it isn't like, oh, I have this new podcast idea. It's like, so I don't know. I've been thinking a lot about like if I were thinking about Secret Lives, this would be an example. I've been thinking a lot about making a show or not even making. I would say I've been thinking a lot about a show where there's two Black women who are hosts and they just talk about like all the secrets. And maybe like it's called like The Secret Lives of Black Women. And if your friend reacts like, oh, that's cool, it's probably not it. You know, if your friend is like, wait, what? Tell me more. What is that? Like, how would that be made? If they just do a, oh, okay, all right, you should do that. You should probably work on the idea a little bit more. But if they are interested, that's like an example of just a little bit, like you have something mm-hmm. and you should just build off of that and just and keep reworking it. If they do an okay, that's yeah. cool, go back, rewrite, try it again, see what happens, go back, rewrite, et cetera, et cetera.
I think what you said about the pitch process being very different from the actual making it is really important because they really are two completely different things. Like the pitch process is you just trying to get other people to understand your vision. Whereas the making it is the making it.
Yeah.
And not everybody's good at the pitch process.
Yeah.
But I think it's also giving yourself time in the pitch process. Because I will say for like Secret Lives, we worked on our pitch for a while.
We did. And we took our time.
We took our time and the show had many iterations before we formally pitched it.
We did.
You know?
We had different names.
We had different names.
We had so many. And
one of the names was Happy List. We were very depressed.
We were so depressed.
And we didn't even know we were like that depressed.
We were just like, what if we did a show called The Sad?
But
you know what's so funny is like, I remember when we got your pitch actually, because my old boss, Laura Mayer, came to me and she was like, I have an idea. Mm-hmm. And I was like, she was like, I just got off the phone. Maybe it was like your agent or someone.
Maybe, yeah.
I think it was like Charla's agent had come to our executive producer with this idea.
And, actually, I went to them directly.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, even better. I just remember there was an agency involved at one point. Either
they
way.
They always love to get involved.
They do. But she just handed me the document. And the document was like, it was long.
Yeah,
it was long. And I just remember reading it and being like, wow. Like, they thought about this and that. And you guys had, it wasn't even like, lots of people send pictures.
Yeah.
You guys didn't really have pictures.
No, we didn't have pictures.
And it was good.
But we should say that Lauren and I are both writers.
Yeah.
You know, and we have experience.
And we thought about episode ideas.
We did.
And like what a season would look like.
And we know the sale and pitching process. So we know that we have to come with a complete idea. Mm-hmm. And we also have a high bar.
Yeah.
Like, Lauren and I were not going to do garbage.
And
you know?
I'm not going to lie. The name was gold.
What advice would you give for someone who's like, okay, being a host of a podcast and creating a podcast is great. I want to be a producer. To like jump in and was like, I want to help people make podcasts.
That's great.
To get started.
Well, first of all,
people don't
think
about the producers.
Yeah, we don't get thought of. So like, if that's what you want to do, get ready. I would say like, you know, just make stuff. Your friend wants to make stuff, produce that. Make it. And I say like, you know, being a producer is sometimes a lot of thankless work. You know, people just see like the credit producer, but they don't really know what goes into that. And that's honestly because it just varies from show to show. I think it's like that for every media, TV and film is like that. And so just kind of being open and flexible to like what that role could look like when you're starting out and trying a whole bunch of different things. You know, sometimes a producer is like someone who's just scheduling a lot. Sometimes a producer is, you know, more so like helping like with the tape. And when I say tape, like Pro Tools, you know, when we were doing this, I didn't mention this earlier, I should have, but when we were making the Millennial Hour, there's free edit software that you can download. We used Audacity, my friend used GarageBand. So just practicing, you know, recording things and then editing in whatever software you can get for free. And then just using that as a baseline to try other kinds of software.
I love what you said about making things, because I feel like the vibe I got from you when we started this process was that you knew what you were doing. Oh. And I feel like that vibe only comes from literally doing. So can you talk more about like just not waiting to get a job, not waiting to get the green light, because yeah. that's putting your, you know, destiny in other people's hands. Like, how can people take reins of their own destiny, just get and do stuff?
Oh my gosh. I'm a huge advocate for just doing the thing you want to do and not waiting for anyone to ask. You have to just get in there. Like, I think for me, like, my biggest advice is, like, if you're not getting the opportunities, just make it happen. And when I say that, I know it's hard. I have a friend who, she's like, yeah, I want to make it, but, like, I'm a perfectionist, and I just want it to be perfect. And I'm like, it's not going to be perfect.
I think that's an excuse.
Yeah.
This is a procrastinator's excuse.
It's not. And know that you're going to make mistakes. Know that it's going to be kind of awkward in the beginning. And
it's going to be bad.
And it's going to be bad. It's not going to be good.
And it should be bad.
It's the thing of expecting it to be bad. Like, Ira Glass has this great thing on taste.
Yes.
And it's just like, if you have good taste, sometimes it's hard for you to get things done because you expect it to be at a barometer, a certain level of things that you like.
Mm-hmm.
But all of those things started out really bad and you just don't see that.
Yeah.
So remember
and you
that,
should
like,
just take it as a nod to your good taste.
Exactly.
That you're like, oh, this is bad.
Yes.
So you know what bad looks like.
Yes.
Which means that you know what good looks like and you can do it.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my goodness. I've made so many bad things, y'all. I can't even count. It's like I've made bad decisions. I would say too, like, I'm lucky, you know, it worked out for me in a lot of ways. I'm not just lucky, I worked really hard. But if it doesn't work out, that's okay too. Like, you don't have to, if you think you want something really bad and it's not happening for you, maybe it's time to take a step back and think about, like, why isn't this happening for me? I'm a woo-woo crystal loving girl. And I think the universe will give you what you need. So just think about that too. It's okay if what's meant for you doesn't come to you immediately.
How do you push through? Like, if you've had a hard day, like, I know you deal with a lot of personalities and you work very hard and long hours. We get emails from Stephanie very late. And it's just like, how do you continue to push through and, like, pour into yourself to make sure that you still have the energy to do your work and pursue your dreams?
I mean, I'm like, I have a good support system. You know, I have friends who really care about me and family that checks in on me. And I try to be the best to them as well. You know, I work really hard, but one thing I've realized is that work will only get you so far. It can't, you know, cuddle you at night or, like, you know, hold you when you're crying. And investing in your personal relationships and just your life outside of work, at least for me, has been the most rewarding part of fulfilling my work life. Like, I can't go to work if I know and do well in my job if I know that when I go home, I'm going to hate myself. And so making sure that I have balance is just the thing that is like, okay, I can keep doing this. It's fine. I'm working at 9:00 tonight. But guess what? This weekend, me and my girls. We're good. We're doing it.
That laugh made it sound like nasty.
Yeah.
Like,
we're pimps. Yeah. In the street.
We're gonna be in the street.
I'm just kidding. It's just what?
This is a whole nother episode.
We're not in
about,
the streets.
Like,
no.
Stephanie's personal life.
No. For me it's balance. I think work. We live in a capitalistic society, so of course, yes. Like we have to work. And I love money. I'm not going to lie. I want to make a lot of it. I'd rather be really rich than be really famous. So I'm constantly working toward that. But at the end of the day, I just know that's not going to be the thing that's like going to be, you know, in my grave with me.
Yeah.
Stephanie's going to be the one to rule us all.
Yeah.
I see it. I'm happy. I know you now.
Yeah. It's been such a great experience working with you, Stephanie. Thank you so much for coming
right
on the pod.
And
I just want to highlight to everyone who listens to this show, like, I know you listen to me and Sharla, but The Secret Lives of Black Women would not be this show without Stephanie Kariuki. And you are the, like, we used to call her the voice of God. She's black.
Because she'll interrupt us while we're talking.
Like, excuse me, can you do that again?
Yeah, no, but in the studio, but from the pitch to the episodes, it's like, your stamp has been put in this too. So thank you so much.
Working with you, I hope, you know, I don't know what your future holds, but whatever happens with the show or with you guys, like, I know that it will go far because honestly, this was the highlight of my 2019. Working on the show was like literally the thing I looked forward to. And also, I love working on a show that my friends actually listen to because they don't all listen to all the things I make.
Yeah.
And this is the only one that they're like, oh my goodness, I heard Akilah Hughes. That's so cool or whatever. So you guys, you clearly know how to make a good idea. So I can't wait to hear what the next one is.
Thank you. My favorite story is when your dad listened to us call you a child genius.
Yes.
And he called you.
My dad just texted me. He said, you're a child genius. And I told him I was going on the podcast today. He's like, oh, I can't wait to listen. He's like, oh, but maybe I shouldn't.
Aww, he should. We only said pimp once.
Right.
You know, we have barely said anything bad.
I think I cursed
bad.
Maybe once.
Yeah.
I if that.
Yeah. But Stephanie, as you know, since you are integral to the DNA of this show, we end every episode with the question to our guest. What is your secret?
It's funny, I knew this question was coming, but like I didn't think about what my answer was gonna be.
It's hard, right?
It's hard. I would say that my secret is like kind of what I was just talking about is balance, you know, being able to just know that I'm at an equilibrium is the thing that kind of keeps me going. Whenever I kind of feel off balance or off kilter, that's when I start making mistakes. And I feel like the only thing that has been able to kind of keep me going is knowing that even when something in my life is kind of off, I know I can just kind of like create balance in other ways so that way I can return to that thing. I guess the other thing is like my friendships and my family, they just are my everything, and they are the reason that I do a lot of what I do, and I'm really grateful to them because I know I could do the craziest thing and they would still have my back. So that, oh, and then drinking a lot of water. My skin is great because of water.
Stephanie does have beautiful skin, my God.
And Kenya,
yeah.
Being from Kenya.
Well, thank you so much, Stephanie.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you for just everything.
Rebecca.
Truly, such a vision. Such a Stephanie Kariuki super fan.
Oh,
maybe we should change the name of the show.
Oh my gosh.
Super fan.
Nah.
I like the name of the show.
I didn't cry.
You were never going to cry.
You were never going to cry. That was like a false expectation.
Do not play us, okay?
You would have had to get into some real shit for me to cry.
I think it's because you also know we'll see you again, I'm sure.
Yeah.
We'll see you a lot.
Obviously.
Yeah.
We will likely text you this weekend.
Yeah. I mean, obviously.
Thank you, Stephanie.
You guys. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, Stephanie just left the studio and I love her. I don't want to say it, but I love her.
Yes. She's just such a joy.
She is.
Stephanie is one of those people that you're like, having you in my life makes it better and you make me better. You know,
she doesn't
makes you rise
bullshit
to the occasion.
She doesn't waste your time. She comes ready. She makes you rise to the occasion. It's just like, ugh, I love you, Stephanie. She's really great at her
I just
job.
Love her. Because she gives her all in everything that she does, and you can feel it.
And
you know?
She also brings herself, so much of herself to, like, you know, Oprah's famous quote, "You be responsible for the energy you bring into the room." And I feel like Stephanie is one of those people that just embodies that.
That like, is so true.
She does. Like, she is happy to be here. She's happy to work with you. And it's like, she doesn't make you, she just makes you feel like, yeah, I'm also happy to be here. Like, I'm also happy to work with you. And she just brings so much of her own personality and her own humor to this work. It doesn't feel like work. It feels
it
like we're
feel
having
like work.
Fun.
What I love like, about yes. Stephanie is that Stephanie has such a generosity of spirit, but also suffers no fools.
Yes, exactly. And she's what? A cool under 30.
A cool baby genius.
I feel like I just stopped suffering fools and I'm still just barely doing it.
Same.
I'm still like, you know, tolerating people wasting my time.
Yeah, I constantly look at Stephanie and I'm like, well, I feel like you've mastered so many things that I wish I had in my 20s.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
a dream. So thankful. What is your word of the week?
So it is a phrase because I've long abandoned the word of the week. But she said work will only get you so far. And true words have never been spoken. I feel like work is not enough, you know, like and I don't get joy out of work unless my personal life is OK, unless it's comfortable, unless it's a refuge, you know. So I feel like what she said about balance and having that be an important part of work and why she's so good at her job is important and something that's good to remember. And I totally am here for it.
Yeah, mine is balance because it's just such an important lesson for me to keep in mind, because I feel like it's really hard for me to find that perfect point of balance. It's either, you know, I can pour too much into work and then my personal life and my care of self suffers, or it's just like then the immediate shift is then to pour too much more into like my care
life,
and my personal life, and it's just
and work
still
suffers.
Work and finding a way to create that balance that both are nourished and taken care of. And it's just that's a constant reminder and a constant struggle for me is finding and creating balance. So balance is going to be my word to just keep in mind.
Amazing.
Gosh, just thank you to Stephanie Kariuki. Mm-hmm. Thank you to her parents, everyone who uplifts her mm-hmm. to bring her into our lives and our world. Oh, she's just the best.
Yes.
And thank you for listening.
Thank you guys, as always, for listening.
And we will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye. The Secret Lives of Black Women is a production of Stitcher. We're your hosts, Charlotte Lariston and Lauren Domino. Our producer is Taylor Hosking. Our senior producer is Stephanie Kariuki. Our editor is Gianna Palmer. Special thanks to our chief content officer, Chris Bannon, and our recording and mixing engineer, Andy Kirstens. Make sure to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at the SLBW. See you later.